Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the FC90 podcast. Do not adjust your aerial or whatever the podcast equivalent of an aerial is. This is not James Jones. He is on a 2-week hiatus to whoever knows where. And in his absence, his loyal servant, his regular sidekick, the one and only Christy Mallion of Christy's Corner, has been given a temporary promotion. Round of applause, guys.
Well done, mate. Well done.
Thank you.
One clap.
Thank you. And obviously, you know, me moving on, or upwards, I should say, we do need not one person, but two to fill my void. So we have a four-man squad this week, and I'm joined by my regular right-hand man, Jack Savile.
Hello, Christy.
Hello.
Nice to see you again.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, good to see you in the hot seat.
And the dynamic duo of Football League World. The one and only George Douglas.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thank you, mate.
Good.
And Louis Chandler, back for 2 weeks in a row, is it?
It is, yeah. Yeah. I think we make a pretty dynamic duo.
Yeah,
he's the more dynamic one.
Must be doing something right to be on 2 weeks in a row, Lou. How did you find last week?
Thought I smashed it.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, usual story.
Also very modest.
Yeah, duo. Very modest. Very modest, Louis. Okay. So I'm going to start off, as James usually does, with a statistic that we will then reveal the answer for at the end of the show, provided someone reminds me, because my memory is even worse than James's. And then I'll go into this week's hot topics.
Oi.
So, Harry Kane missed a penalty for England on Tuesday night. And despite our notorious bad luck in penalty shootouts, that actually ended a run of 23 consecutively scored for England in competitive internationals in regular time. The previous one that was missed was way back in Euro 2004 against France, but who missed it?
Ooh. I've got an idea.
I'm going to let you brew on that. Yeah. I'm going to let you marinate on that for a little while.
I'll happily marinate.
Roughly, roughly 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And then we'll reveal that at the end of the show, provided once again someone actually reminds me to say it. Okay, so into this week's talking points. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about England. 2 wins out of 2 for England, leaves in top of qualifying Group A. The Kosovo clash, though, was a little less comfortable than expected. But Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling seem to be developing a very exciting partnership. They scored and assisted each other in the previous game against...
Is this a trick question?
Bulgaria? No, I actually forgot. But
yeah, good. I'd completely forgotten that as well.
And I believe Sterling assisted Kane once again while scoring himself against Kosovo. But should we be concerned with the defensive lapses against Kosovo? Should we be praising England for taking more risks and playing more exciting football? Or do we simply owe the Kosovans massive respect, as they say on the streets, for really just giving it a go and running around like lunatics for an hour and a half? More importantly, have we actually learned anything from this international break? Or do we learn anything from any international breaks? Hashtag bring back the Nations League.
That's a hashtag I can get behind.
Yeah, get it trending.
That's a hashtag Scotland can get behind.
Very good.
Zing.
We will talk about Scotland very briefly a little later, actually. Talking point number two. Watford's Sakaru / Switcheroo. Javi Gracia out, and the most handsome man in football, perhaps except for David Ginola, back in. If only we'd had Snog Mary manage for this week, eh, Dags?
Yeah, I don't think I would have picked Kike, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
To be honest,
he looks a bit withered. he's don't know where he's been.
But, too much time in the sunshine.
Yeah.
Do you think his best years are gone?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So, have Watford been a little gung-ho here? Have they made the right appointment? Or, bearing in mind his beautiful looks, Mr. Sanchez Flores, are they simply shacking up with the most attractive and available ex they could find?
The safe option.
The safe option, you know, a couple of months of fun until something more genuine comes along. I think we've all been there. Well, I say we've all been there. Some more than others, probably. And then finally, of course, with the international break now out of the way, the Premier League returns this weekend. Is this the weekend where we find out what this Premier League season is going to be all about? Is it going to be a microcosm of the battle to break up the Big Six? Are Chelsea United the likeliest to drop out of it? Are Wolves and Leicester the likeliest to break into it? And what are the chances of any of the aforementioned teams actually doing so? So let's rewind. Go back to the top of the order. England. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Louis Chandler?
Well, having completely missed the first game, I will only comment on the Kosovo match. I think it's probably a game where you just accentuate the positives more, I think. I feel like the defensive issues are stuff that were roughly known before. But yeah, the front three of Sterling, Kane and Sancho was unbelievable at times, especially Sterling. I thought looked absolutely world class. Yeah, it's definitely still defensive issues to sort out, but I think it's probably been blown up a bit more than it is actually important.
I feel like on the Kosovo first goal, though, obviously it's hard to tell because it's 1 minute into the game, but do you think there might have been an actual plan there to target Barkley when he's passing it backwards? Because obviously England got picked off of that same tactic against the Netherlands in the Nations League. It seemed quite interesting that it was almost like the striker had completely anticipated the ball was going backwards. I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have pressed so high had they not sort of known that we were going to be susceptible.
I think we're looking at lessons that we may or may haven't learned. Marcus Rashford's in trouble. Okay. Is the lesson I'd take away.
Okay, yeah.
Just looking at the front three.
What sort of trouble? As in he's not getting back in that team?
Yeah. I genuinely think that.
I did think against Bulgaria it was a case of putting him on the wing just for the sake of having him in the team, even though clearly Sancho and Sterling are much better wingers than...
It just looked more balanced without him. As sort of harsh that is to say, he's a great talent and potentially he's going to be Manchester United's main striker this season, but I can't see it.
Doesn't get into that team for you? No. I think that's fair. Jack, I think you made an interesting point as well. If we want England to be a passing team, are we going to have to accept goals like that every now and then? Whether it's...
Not against Kosovo, I don't think.
Okay. No. Whether it's orchestrated
or not.
Maybe
that's why you get more complacent.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, it's a similar... We had a similar issue against the Netherlands, didn't we? As you said. And there was much talk about it then. But if we want England to not just hoof the ball up to Wayne Rooney, who's surrounded by 10 defenders every time, is this basically what we're going to have to settle for?
Yeah. Although I think, okay, it's great. Let's have a passing game. We need the players to produce the passing game. I don't think England really have that. At the moment, the one thing England always seemed to lack is that sort of player that plays deep and dictates tempo.
Yeah.
And the classic argument is we had Paul Scholes. Paul Scholes was put on the left to accommodate Lampard and Gerrard.
Had Michael Carrick.
Yeah, I was going to say Michael Carrick was there. He never really played either, did he?
No.
To be honest, could have played more. But again, Gerrard and Lampard were there. And it seems now that your likes of Gerrard and Lampard are gone, there isn't actually someone that can come in and really have the midfield built around them. I mean, I know Henderson's played deep, but he's not really that kind of player. And even Liverpool have realised that now. He's gone back to where he was when he played in the midfield with Steven Gerrard at Liverpool, and Gerrard was the holding player. Henderson's better at surging up and down the pitch instead of dictating tempo. So for me, let's have a passing style, but only when the players are capable of doing it. And I think, I know Jack, you said it shouldn't happen against Kosovo, which is a fair point, but I think the problem is because we're not as good, it's going to happen against Kosovo because we just haven't mastered it. It's like any skill. If you're not a master of it straight away, then you're going to make mistakes that you're not going to make.
And obviously, teams like Kosovo are going to prey on that as well. Yeah,
and I think we'll probably get onto Kosovo in a minute, but they've come on leaps and bounds with their playing style.
So how much massive respect do we owe to Kosovo? Because I thought their second goal was an absolutely wonderful goal.
Really
good ball over the top. Positive run from Valon Berisha into the box. Little cut inside and tucked away into the side
finish.
Very good. So how much respect do we owe Kosovo here?
A lot. A massive amount.
A massive amount.
Because I think they're probably looked at, because obviously, they've only really just burst onto the scene, if you like, on in international football terms in the last few years. And the problem has been they've looked at as a minnow. But if you look at where they're coming from geographically in football terms, it's from an area where there's actually a lot of good footballers.
Yeah.
And a lot of players that potentially would have played for Kosovo when, if they had existed a few years ago, obviously can't now because they've declared for other international teams. But I think we're starting to see players looking at it, thinking we can play for our country now, and that's just a snowball effect in a way. I think. So yeah, they might be a smaller country, but you look at like Croatia, they've only got 1.2 million people, they've got a fantastic football team that made the World Cup final.
Yeah.
Kosovo potentially can't do that just yet.
What's Kosovo's population though? I feel like that's even higher than Croatia maybe. Or am I wrong there?
I don't know that.
I did Google it, I think it was 1.7 million as well.
Okay, so they've got a few, maybe, I mean I could be wrong with the Croatian population.
I mean Croatia's much bigger than Kosovo, isn't it? So.
I don't think it's got many people though. I think you'd be surprised.
A lot of pointless mountains, things like that.
Yeah,
well, seaside.
Okay. Wasted space.
Yeah. Wasted space, yeah. Turn them all into car parks.
get some flats in there.
Yeah.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
What they need is loads of Tesco Expresses. That'll sort of
try and
out.
Sell that to the Croatian tourist board next time you go. But anyway, the point is, these smaller countries with smaller population doesn't necessarily matter. They're football is their main sport, really.
I suppose Iceland's the other key example, isn't it? Well, that's about a million. And they absolutely love football over there. I think 95% of people play football over there. Something outrageous. So, yeah. Cool. All right, guys, let's move on to the Watford situation. I think there was something like half an hour between the dismissal of Javi Gracia and the reappointment of Kike Sanchez Flores, Mr. Dreamboat himself.
Spooky,
yes.
Almost as if they had it planned already.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, like a very sinister conspiracy. Mm. Is this, well, first of all, I think, do we feel Watford have pulled the plug at the right time? Or is it a bit premature? How do we feel about Javi Gracia's his lot, I guess you would say, at this point?
It's probably premature for any other club in the Premier League, because it's Watford. Yeah. It's almost as if, what took you so long?
Yeah, it's almost overdue, isn't it, for Watford, yeah.
I think what surprised me more is who they've gone for. Given that they got rid of Flores so ruthlessly, it's almost like they've been itching to bring him back, but they've never really had the chance to almost apologise. It's quite baffling, to be honest.
Lou, where do you stand on bringing back old managers? Have Peterborough done that in the past?
Well, we have brought Darren Ferguson back for his third stint as our manager in the last year. Yeah. That seems to be working. I don't have anything against it, but I feel sacking Gracia is pretty rash.
He did get to the FA Cup final last season.
It just shows the impatience that sort of is infesting modern football more and more these days. And I think appointing Flores back again sort of shows that the board are completely running out of ideas. And I'm not sure it's an appointment that's going to work for Watford, really.
Oh, they just run out of managers rather than ideas.
Pretty much, yeah.
Just gone through all of them.
I'm quite surprised Flores has actually agreed. Given that he already know, as soon as it starts going wrong, he'll be out the door again.
It wasn't a sour ending, but he was quite open about it when he got sacked as well, saying me and the club had completely different views on how the season went.
Yeah, so what's changed?
I do wonder what's different now. What have they
they've had a look back at that season, and suddenly they think he's going, oh, actually, no, it went pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got 57 points, I think, that season, didn't they?
I don't think it'd be that high.
Was it not that high?
No, it might be around 50.
But I mean, there was a lot of points. There was sort of points tally which you think Watford aren't going to do any better than that.
Yeah. Mm.
So it seems strange to sack him at the time, but then getting to an FA Cup final as well for Gracia again, just like losing to Man City in the final, not going to do much better than that either. Yeah. So I don't really know what it is that Watford are looking for and like how high they're expecting to rise.
What I do find quite interesting though is really during that time, the style of play is still kind of what Flores implemented in the first place, where it was basically 4-4-2, very organised. Very resilient, and they've not really come that far away from that.
Similar figurehead still at the club as well.
I think the only time really they have is under Marco Silva, where it was obviously a lot more we either win gloriously or lose. So maybe he can sort of seamlessly fit back in. Maybe the identity hasn't changed all that much. Clearly, though, Watford do need to turn around results. Been a pretty poor start to the season from them. I think it's 1 point from four. One goal scored, which was away at Newcastle, where apparently everyone scores. So, something will have to change. Do we think Watford will naturally improve at this point?
I think they will, but I don't know if it'll be particularly Flores' impact, to be honest. I think just naturally the players, I mean, someone like Troy Deeney is probably going to get in and amongst them, if you like.
As he always does.
And, yeah, so I think that eventually they'll rally and they might be okay, but I don't think Flores is going to have a particularly huge effect on their performances this year.
Okay. Jack, you'll be worrying about Watford a lot this season, I imagine.
Probably, you think so?
Probably not, actually.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean...
But yeah, thoughts on the start of the season and whether this is the right thing to do at this stage?
I mean, I think after four games, it's always completely rash to sack anybody. You're not really giving anyone enough time, but yeah, it's just the theme of Watford, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I don't really know too much about Flores' sort of recent history. I know he's been at Espanyol and he's been in China as well, maybe. Mm-hmm. Don't know particularly how well he's done there. So, yeah, I don't know what sort of form he's coming into this job on. But I imagine that Watford do have a good enough squad to stay up. But I just don't really see their season sort of having much of a plot, really. I feel like last season, obviously, they got to the FA Cup final. That was quite a big talking point. But this season, yeah, I mean, I don't know what their ambitions are. Garcia said last season that he told his players he wanted to win the league, which is why they did so well. So I don't know what Flores is going to come in and say to top that. Try and get them playing.
I wonder what he said at the start of this season, considering how badly it's gone so far.
So we'll get top four this season, and then, hence the decline.
Okay, and then our final sort of big talking point for this week. The Premier League is back. Two fixtures really stand out for me this weekend: Man United versus Leicester and Chelsea versus Wolves. And I do feel like this is almost like two games of gatekeeping for Man United and Chelsea. If they lose these, then I think in terms of top six, clearly they're going to have an ongoing battle season. If they win these, then maybe they give themselves a bit of time to, just keep ahead of the rest of the pack.
Mm. Mm.
So do we think, first, I think we've discussed this already on the podcast, so we'll go over it briefly. Are Chelsea and United the likeliest to drop out of the top six? And are Wolves and Leicester the likeliest to slot into it?
Yes.
Yes, that's the simple answer.
Yeah.
Well, I think United and Chelsea are the most likely to drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly obvious reasons, probably. Just Chelsea they haven't been able to sign anyone. Frank Lampard's completely new to management, and their squad's not actually... It's probably one of the worst Chelsea squads I can remember.
It's quite a strange Chelsea squad, where there's just lots of players, but you're not convinced any of them are actually any good.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then the Man United squad is okay. It's not brilliant, but there's potential there if it's finishing the top four. I just think Solskjaer's ability as a manager will leave them short, probably. In terms of Leicester and Wolves, I think Leicester are probably the best team to potentially break into the top six. I'm not overly convinced by Wolves, though, this year, purely because of the Europa League campaign, because they've already struggled to get results qualifying, and now they've made it into the groups. How are they going to handle it? Will they drop away with the Thursday-Sunday factor coming into play? Who's going to be the team that can replace Wolves as potential top six?
Nobody seeing another title challenge from Leicester this season.
Well, here's a question: is Leicester's starting 11 better than Chelsea's or Man United's?
I think if you take
Chelsea's,
out,
I'd say so.
Better than Chelsea's.
Yeah, I think United's is weird because there's quite a few players you look at in there who think they're really good players, but then. Yeah, when it comes to knitting them all together, like Dags alluded to with Solskjaer, it just doesn't seem to work for them.
Yeah, a few too many Scott McTominay's in there as well, I think. Jesse
being quite the fact he's been one of he's been one of their standout players, which kind of says
more
everything
about the rest of the team, doesn't it, really? I think.
Yeah.
In terms of manager, Brendan Rodgers and Nuno Santo are the better managers, aren't they? But, I mean, Rodgers obviously gets panned for some of the clichés he comes out with. And obviously his time as Liverpool ended a bit sourly.
Yeah. I mean, the last season at Liverpool was pretty poor.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But there was such a
decline, really. Balotelli up front as well. So.
Yeah, it just
fell apart.
Balotelli
and Lambert. Everyone was just harsh.
Yeah, it weren't great. Yeah. But then, obviously, everyone's going to say, oh, Celtic, you should be winning the league. But it was the manner in which they did win the league and the fact that they won the treble three times. Obviously, it wasn't actually the Celtic manager at the end of the season last year, but he still basically
did all the hard work,
effectively. Yeah. So I think that's why he jumped at the chance to Leicester, because he's got the budget there, they've got good players, and he can show that he's a manager that should be managing Man United or Chelsea or one of those clubs.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't want to say Leicester a stepping stone for him, but I think he's shown on countless occasions that he's ruthless enough to take the bigger job when it comes around. And he'll probably see that this is his opportunity to do so, particularly if they get into the top six.
Okay. And should Leicester or Wolves get into the top six, do we feel like this is a one-off, or is this an expansion of the big six into a big seven or big eight or big 10, if you will?
We might have a league.
A big 20, yeah. Who knows?
Could even be the beginning of like some breakaway division at some stage. I don't know what the long-term future of Premier League is, but yeah, you just look at the teams that are coming up. There is going to get to a point where the golfing class is just too much because of the financial aspect of it. Mm. The Championship club comes up, they don't have any money to, like Sheffield United, for example, are up against it, and they'd probably have a certain shelf life in the Premier League, whereas the likes of Leicester, West Ham, whatever, they're all got rich owners, so theoretically, if they spend the money relatively wisely, they'll stay at a certain level. Yeah. So yeah, I see it becoming like a top eight, maybe top 10 could be a bit much, and then who knows, 10 years down the line, maybe that then becomes its own breakaway league, I don't know.
But then if you have a big 10, is it really a big 10? Because they're all beating each other, just, so the bottom 10 will catch up, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and then you'd have a big two in the big 10.
Yeah, that's true. Liverpool and City are a bit harder to catch than the rest.
They are a class above at the moment, yeah. But I think this is an interesting season as well. You know, when people talk about inventing a European Super League, but then you look at this season and, you know, we're already kind of debating whether Leicester's team is actually better than Man United's. And obviously Man United would get into that European Super League,
yeah,
and Leicester would basically not have a chance because they've had 1 year of playing Champions League football ever throughout their entire history, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where the whole European Super League stuff falls apart for me, because it's just not a meritocracy anymore, is it? It's a historicocracy, if that's a word. If it's not a word. It should be. I'm trademarking that. It's pretty good. People will be saying that all the time in a few years, I reckon.
What was the word again?
Historicocracy.
Did you say that right? Sounded a little bit wrong.
Yeah, it sounded... I emphasised probably the wrong part of that word.
Yeah.
Iron out the creases in it.
Yeah. We'll work on it. We'll work on it. Okay. We're going to take a very small break. And then when we come back, George, I believe you have an EFL rundown for us.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Good stuff, sliding down the pyramid,
as
they say.
Yeah, could word it like that.
And welcome back to the FC 90 podcast. This section, I'm basically going to hand the hosting reins, albeit very briefly, still mine.
I'll look after
it's your power.
Yes, yeah, my power. You can borrow it. To George Douglas, who will be giving us an EFL rundown featuring Louis Chandler, I'd imagine, seeing as he...
I don't know. I don't know if I agree to that.
you just point at me when you want me to freestyle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Louis's seen my points, but hopefully, or...
Yeah,
I'm praying at least that he can.
I mean, certainly point one. I feel like Louis's going to have a lot more to say on this than me, and potentially Jack as well.
Potentially, yeah.
Well, let's see.
I've got a strong feeling.
Let's see.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's dive in. Let's dive straight
start
in.
Start in League One.
Sliding down the pyramid. Let's go.
Yeah. In League One, we'll start with Wycombe Wanderers, who are top of the third tier after winning against Lincoln at the weekend. 3-1 they won. Fun stat. It's their highest ever league position in their 132-year history.
Wow.
So they've never been this high before in the Football League.
That is quite incredible, really, isn't
it?
It must be fun to be Wycombe right now.
Yeah. So, well, they're enjoying it on social media. They are milking the fact that they are top of League One for the first time ever. But, I mean, the real story, and there's a couple of stories from Wycombe. I mean, one that they were one of the fancied sides to go down at the start of this season.
Is that according to Football League World? Because we already know how questionable their predicted championship
table was. Not just Football League World, a wider range of bookmakers suggested that Gareth Ainsworth's men were potentially going to drop at the end of this season, but so far they look like they might be going up. Obviously, Gareth Ainsworth is one of the more highly regarded young managers, I guess, in the EFL. He's doing a great job.
He's got good hair.
He has got cracking hair. Yeah. Doesn't look like a football manager. Looks like he should be a band's manager or something like that from the 80s. Anyway, he's not. He's a good football manager. But the real story coming out of the Wycombe result was Joe Jacobson's hat-trick.
Is he... I believe he's a left-back.
He is.
There you go.
See, this is where it gets good. What was even better about that? I'm guessing you haven't seen his hat-trick.
No, I have not.
Have you seen it, Jack?
I have not seen it, no.
I have.
Good. Louis done his search.
Good work, Louis.
He scored this hat-trick, which is obviously rare for a left-back anyway, but they were all from set pieces, two of which were from corners.
Oh, wow.
directly from the corner.
From the corner, yeah. So the first goal he scored was just a bog-standard free kick that he whipped in. Anyone could do that. The second one was a corner that looked like it had been bundled home by Michael Boswick, the Lincoln defender.
Yeah.
So it was originally given as an own goal, but the dubious goal panel happily intervened at the start of the week and said, no, that's one of Jacobson's goals as well. It would be rude not to give him that.
On that note, does anyone know who's actually involved in the dubious goals panel, where their headquarters is?
They're a very elusive
creature.
Strict confidentiality.
I feel like it's almost a front for something else, maybe, but like some sort of...
That's a conspiracy.
What are they really getting up to?
Exactly. You know, all they're really doing is going, oh, yeah, it's his goal. What are they doing the rest of the time?
Well, I'd imagine they just...
For the whole world, they're doing that, for every level of football.
They probably have other jobs, but they just, on the side, are in the dubious goal panel. Maybe.
I just assume there's just a pool of referees, is it not? And like certain referees get asked, oh, what do you reckon this, mate?
That's the goal, isn't
it? To be honest,
or other inspectors in different fields.
It can't be a full-time role, can it? Because it only comes out about once every few weeks. Yeah. Oh, that's a dubious goal. Get the panel reunited.
Assemble the committee. Yeah, get them in.
Anyway, they decided that the second was Joe Jacobson's. And then in the second half, he had another corner. And the home crowd at Adams Park instructed him to shoot, which I don't think has ever happened from a corner before.
Yeah.
And he obliged and he scored again from a corner.
The goalkeeper had the ringing sound of shoot in his ears and he still managed to concede.
What's gone on there? Yeah.
So he's got a lovely left foot on him.
I've seen him play actually a few times. Was it Shrewsbury he played for before?
Mm.
For a while, I think. Saw him play for them pretty well a few times. But yeah, what is the goalie doing there? That's a very bad day.
I wouldn't like to comment.
To let in two corners.
Is it a near post strike? No, like with laces or is it curls?
Yeah, so the first corner is bundled in at the near post.
Yeah.
But it was given to him.
Yeah.
The second one does actually loop over the keeper. So there's a variety of corner goals.
Fascinating hat trick.
Has that ever happened before in any game? I don't know. Goals direct from a corner from the same player?
I think that happened when I used to play for my team when I was about 11.
Yeah.
There was one kid who was really good. And
so he just embarrassed the...
Yeah, just embarrassed everyone else.
Fair enough.
We'll count that.
Yeah, so we'll unlucky, Joe Jacobson.
Yeah. Yeah. You haven't done that.
Sorry, mate. It's already been done in Russell Park. In the Barnhurst Bexleyheath area several years ago.
It's so probably a little plaque to that there, isn't it?
Yeah, I imagine so.
Well, Wickham can shut up then, can't they?
Yeah.
Going on about it.
Okay.
But no, really impressive hat-trick, so fair play. They're top of the league. They're going great guns at the moment.
Okay. Good stuff.
Let's go on to point two. Bit of a Lincoln theme to it. Danny and Nicky Cowley have left Lincoln and gone to Huddersfield. They're the new managers there. Well, manager and assistant manager. Danny being the main man.
The most exciting brothers in football management currently, would you say?
Yeah, I find it hard to think of anyone to compare them to.
The Comans? Or the Cubans?
Yeah, I suppose.
Although they're not really exciting.
Did Ronald De Boer manage for a bit?
I think he's...
Frank De Boer did.
Yeah, I think Ronald was like youth team / assistant, I think.
Not as fun, is it?
Yeah,
the Cowleys are like a real double act. So they've gone to Huddersfield. They've left Lincoln, perhaps a little bit of a surprise. Because Lincoln are doing well, obviously didn't at the weekend, but overall they've been doing well in League One. Huddersfield are struggling at the moment in the Championship. I think at first Huddersfield were going to fail in their pursuit of the Cowleys, but they went back with a fresh offer, seemed to have twisted Danny and Nicky's respective arms. So they've gone there. They've said that basically Danny Cowley explained that he wanted to go because he likes having his back against the wall.
That's quite interesting.
And you feel alive when that happens. So that's why he's gone to Huddersfield, because he wants his back against the wall.
It's very interesting.
Be interested to see how they do. Obviously, they're really, you know, methodical, stats-based managers, up-and-coming young football coaches that are kind of like the new era of...
What do you do to sort of motivate them then? Do you just sort of threaten them in a tiny room and then...
Don't know.
Okay, cool.
Whatever floats their boat. Yeah. But, I mean, good luck to them at Huddersfield. They did a great job at Lincoln, obviously. Several trophies and promotions later, Lincoln are in their best state they have been for a fair few decades.
Yeah,
put it that way.
Given what he achieved at Lincoln, do you think that he just thought that he'd kind of take them as far as they could go, or is it just a case of...
Yeah, potentially. I think there's an argument to suggest that Lincoln probably were contenders to go into the championship, though.
That's kind of what I was...
If you look at what... There's a lot of parallels between what happened at Luton. Obviously, Nathan Jones went to Stoke, he's not really working out there, and Luton have got into the championship, so we'll see. And the other managerial change, Sheffield Wednesday finally announced that Gary Monk is going to be the new manager.
The only Gary spells it with two R's that I've ever seen, anyway.
Like Harry. So it sounds like it's just a typo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of makes more sense, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That spelling, really.
Yeah.
Surprised more people don't go for it. So Gary Monk's at Sheffield Wednesday.
One R should be Gary, really, shouldn't it? Anyway, that'll be my contribution.
Good.
Yeah. Gary Monk.
Gary Monk. Cool.
Anyway, Sheffield Wednesday manager. He's got another EFL championship gig. Let's see how this one goes.
Yeah.
He did well at Birmingham. Leeds was all right. Obviously, ended in acrimonious circumstances. Middlesbrough didn't particularly work out, and obviously at Swansea started off well, but it kind of went to pot.
I still think he was quite unlucky to get sacked by Swansea, actually, to be fair. So maybe he feels like that as well.
Maybe
deep line resentment. Always looks tired.
Yeah,
Gary Monk always looks really tired.
Like, because he works so hard.
It's like he's not slept for 2 days. Each time you see him.
And funnily enough, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday playing each other this weekend.
Oh, new manager derby.
Yeah, exactly that. So that'll be a good one to watch. And finally, I was just going to touch on some other games to look out for.
Some other big fixtures.
Yeah.
Hit me with them.
Over the EFL. There's Fulham West Brom.
Kapow.
Louis, you've seen a lot of Fulham, haven't you, so far this season?
I have, or twice, but yeah.
That's not bad going.
That's a third.
We're only just into September.
Yeah.
Sort of. I've had a third of September. But
is that just to enjoy the ambiance of Craven Cottage?
No. No, they're local to me and they're very entertaining to watch as well. And yeah, that match with West Brom should be quite a cracker. I think West Brom really starting to piece it together as well, by all accounts, under Bilic.
Yeah.
So yeah, be a good one. I'm not going, no, sadly. Okay.
There's also another Yorkshire derby, Barnes against Leeds at Oakwell. Obviously, didn't play each other last year. Barnes have just come up from League One. That should be a interesting watch. In South Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm. Barnsley pinched a couple of Leeds' players in the summer as well, didn't they?
Yeah, Apo Halme there.
Three of them, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah.
Is it three?
What's his name? Wilkes.
Malik Wilkes.
Yeah.
Who was there, obviously, on loan last year. So, a few players potentially wanting to prove a point to Marcelo Bielsa. League One, Wickham, the league leaders, are away at Gillingham. Gillingham was struggling, really. Steve Evans went there, signed a lot of players, as he always does.
No way. No.
Yeah. I know. Can you imagine? Steve Evans signing players, unheard of.
Change of tact for him.
So he signed a truckload, and it's not really worked out so far.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if they did actually come in a truck as well. One truck of new players, please.
Just ordered on Amazon.
Then herd the Steve ones he Evans. Wants out onto it. And yeah.
That's quite a dangerous game, really, because if you bring in loads of players and it doesn't work, you've then left the club in a massive mess.
Yeah.
Is that what he does?
I mean,
in his last three jobs, maybe.
Yeah.
What he did at Crawley, and obviously being from Crawley, he did a really good job there.
Yeah.
Backed by a great deal of money for a club that was in the Conference at the time. Since he has tended to leave teams on fairly not good terms, for want of a better description.
Bit of a Harry Redknapp.
Yeah, but without
the Champions League
qualification.
Yeah.
another game to watch out for in League One is Ipswich against Doncaster. Two teams going very well so far this season. Darren Moore's doing a really good job at Doncaster, isn't he, Louis?
He is. Good to see. I thought he was very harshly sacked by West Brom.
Yeah, so he's got Louis' approval. Louis is a big fan of Darren Moore.
He'll be buzzing with that.
I'm a big fan of Darren Moore.
Yeah. Oh, we'll be pleased to know he's doing well at Doncaster too.
A lot of the way he talks, but I don't even know why.
Yeah, just like him.
Yeah.
He's got a lovely presence, hasn't he?
He does.
Yeah.
Gentle giant.
Anyway, this is for a separate Darren Moore fan cast.
And then finally in League Two, Stevenage, Dino Malmaria, I think I said his name right. He was sacked earlier this week. They're at home to Carlisle. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on. They were playoff contenders last year towards the end of the season, and Mamry has been there as a player, coach and manager for a long time. They started this season pretty poorly, so he's been given the old heave-ho. So see how they get on, life after him. And in terms of like the teams nearer the top, Exeter at home to Leyton Orient, should win that one. And Newport County, who are keeping them honest at the top, are away at Northampton, who threw away a lead last time out at Bradford.
Cool.
There you go.
All right. Thank you very much, George. Featuring Louis Chandler.
Pleasure.
And it does bring us on to the topic for Christie's Corner this week, which I will reveal after a small break. And welcome to Christie's Corner. Shum, 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 shum. That's what we should have, but we haven't got the budget. So, shum, 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 shum. You know, like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah, yeah. When you come back in.
Yeah, that's what we need. Could do with some better lighting in here as well, because as you are probably all aware, it's pretty dark and dingy in Christie's Corner. No windows. Have put all the meat away for the second week in a row, which is good. Mm. Not leaving out any cured meat this week. So, thank you, Christie.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
Yeah, cheers. Okay, so this week's topic for Christie's Corner is an interesting one. Very urban, very hip, very cool. I've been watching...
Sounds like all the things that me and Louis aren't.
Yeah, no, unfortunately so. No, I mean, me and George, on the other hand, are a couple of happening chaps.
Yeah, I mean, Jack's paid me a compliment there that I've never been called hip before.
It's more trying to par Louis, and it looks like it's had the desired effect.
I think Christie and Dags are both going to smash this question, okay. I think.
You are so wrong.
Okay, well, let me set the scene. I've become an avid fan of the BBC show The Rap Game. Has anyone else seen it at all?
I've not.
No, I'm aware of the concept.
It is literally Fame Academy, but about rapping, and they all stay in a flat in Birmingham. That's meant to be a penthouse suite, but it's basically what you could get with Airbnb if you look around and have about 8 people to split between. Bit of a budget Fame Academy about rapping. One of the main things that has drawn me to this TV show is some of the incredible names of the rappers on the show. The main two I particularly like, one is Chade. So yeah. Chad with an E.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Jack? Sort of grimacing there?
Well, it just doesn't seem that inventive. If you're going to go on a TV show and be a rapper, then I thought you might, taking it a step up.
Would it make it better if I told you that Chade had a top knot and stubble?
It would make it a lot worse.
Okay.
But cool. I see what you're getting at there, yeah.
And then the second one, which to this day I can't decide is either brilliant or just awful as a rap name, and that is Unknown Smooth.
Not a fan of that.
No.
Sorry.
No? No? No fans of Unknown Smooth?
No, it sounds like a name you're more likely to hear in a court case or something on a rap album, I think.
No, well, I kind of agree.
What happens when he becomes known? He can't be Unknown Smooth when everyone knows you.
It's actually a woman, so...
Okay,
Lesson learned there, Jack Savile.
Yeah, embarrassed myself.
Yeah, you have, actually.
It just doesn't make sense. Grammatically, it's poor.
Yeah, it is poor grammar.
I know, I mean, rappers, when their names... are sometimes suspect when it comes to that area of English. But
it's just two adjectives slapped together, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mysterious rough, that'd be better.
But save it, George, because this week's question in Christie's Corner is, what would your rap name be and what would be the title of your first, in brackets, autobiographical album?
Nice.
It's a tough one,
yeah,
but hopefully a fun one. So, who wants to go first?
Oh, God.
Go on. Go on, George.
I'm not going to use Mysterious Rough.
No? Although I did think that was better than Unknown Smooth, to be fair. So.
Yeah. But then I don't think much would be worse than Unknown Smooth.
Yeah.
Anyway, if she's listening, you carry on. I think I'd just go for something quite simple, really, and Jack kind of alluded to it, so I can't think of anything better. But given that my surname is Douglas... I would go with daggers.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. And thinking about the connotations of daggers.
Yeah.
My autographical... careful.
Yeah.
You made your own jokes there. Thinking of my first autobiographical album, something along the lines of The Knives Are Out.
Oh,
yeah.
No message.
That is pretty good, actually. The knives are out. Yeah. Daggers, the knives are out. Mm. Pretty good. I like that a lot. Very
who
good.
Who are the knives?
I mean, who are the knives?
Yeah, they could be, are they literal knives or are they...
Your clique.
Could be your support band.
Yeah. Or your backing dancers.
I believe they would say crew.
Entourage.
Yeah.
People that don't like me, which there are many.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Sadly.
Well.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a very strong front runner already.
Thank you.
Maybe we can do some sort of Twitter poll on who has the best rap name. That'd be
or
quite...
maybe we could bury these as quickly as possible after talking about
Louis Chandler.
Yes.
Are you going for Louis C. Handler, which I think would be quite good? Mm. Or do you have
absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. I think Handler's probably best kept out of any of these names.
Do you have one of your own?
Yeah, I've gone down the sort of near plagiarism route for mine.
Yeah.
Or puns.
Yeah.
So my name would be So Solid Lou.
Oh, I like it.
That's quite good.
Yeah. I like it.
And then my album would be called Straight Out of Fletton,
which is
documenting my eventful times in and around Peterborough and the specific area of Peterborough where much of my time was spent. Not a lot of rap comes out of Peterborough, so a massive gap in the market, yeah. I think, to say the least.
That's what they're lacking in Peterborough is local grime artists.
I think it's rap game's lacking.
Yeah, really. Probably, to be fair. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is one guy from Scunthorpe, which is kind of not near Peterborough, but similar deal.
Who's that?
He's called FOS, which stands for Freedom of Speech, which is quite a good name, actually.
Yeah.
Jack Savile?
I'm a bit stumped on this one, to be honest.
Yeah.
Don't really have anything that's immediately springing to mind.
Do you want some more thinking time?
No, because I'm just going to sit here and think. Still don't have anything.
Okay.
I was going to go for something really basic, like Savillionaire.
Ooh, yeah.
It's interesting.
I mean, that's just the only thing that's managed to pop into my brain. And okay. I'm not really giving,
Savillionaire.
You could have the S as a dollar sign as well.
Or could you just have...
That'd be very...
Yeah. Okay, now it's all adding up.
That's quite cool.
Thanks for the help there.
And then what's your album going to be called?
Well, it probably should be something related to money. Or it could be something documenting my sort of trials and tribulations moving from Manchester to London. Something about being out from the cold, or I don't know.
Seems like a bit of a stereotype. Right?
Yeah. Warm.
Warm?
Yeah, just warm.
Just warm?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Out from the cold, warm.
Out from the cold, warm.
I'm just thinking aloud. There's no need to there's no need to persecute me.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are we going for the album name?
I'm a bit lost for inspiration. I don't really understand you're out the cold, warm.
Just
out the cold, the cold, warm.
I think we're lost here.
Yeah,
broken down.
Okay, the cold warm sounds good to me.
The cold warm.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay,
cool.
Don't know what it means, but yeah.
So
you can take that one.
So my rap name, is Musty Tender.
Musty Tender.
Well, that's vile.
Just think, it sounds like Love Me Tender.
That sounds like a.
But obviously, I'm just a bit musty, aren't I?
Sounds like a '60s like
country singer or something. Well,
rather than rap name.
I'm bringing it back, retro. Yeah.
Mm. Like you're going to have a harmonica and a little slide guitar.
Well, those weird things that only hobos have, where it's like a stick with a little blanket.
A bindle, is it?
Yeah, a bindle, is that what they're called?
So our school had a sister called Bindle.
Wow.
Named after the instrument, presumably.
Mm. What a strange name.
Yeah.
And my album will be called Sweaty, Muddy, Drunk. Which just kind of sums up.
Again, it's very, very just, more country
that's
music.
That's got a merchandise line in it, isn't it? All over shirts and
sweaty,
muddy, drunk.
Sweaty, muddy, drunk.
Yeah.
Just what I get up to.
Again, the S being a dollar sign, I see.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Good.
Cool. Okay, so.
Nice.
That's our rap names. For next week, we'll all be doing our first rap songs, so please do prepare.
Mm.
I think I'm ill then.
Yeah, that's going to be.
Can it be more of a poem than a rap?
Is a rap not a poem?
Well, maybe, but slightly different in tone, usually.
Yeah, do some spoken word.
More aggressive.
Yeah. Streets-esque.
Yeah.
No, just to clarify, we'll not all be rapping next week, because that would be highly embarrassing for all of us. So let's do a quick straw poll. Who's got the best rap name?
Daggers.
Yeah?
I mean,
what was yours again, Lou?
So Solidly.
Oh,
I quite like Solid.
I did quite like that. Yeah.
Quite good,
I'm not going to vote for myself.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm going to vote for Louis.
I'm going to vote for George. So I guess it's a dead heat.
Oh, I'll vote for myself.
I'll vote for my vote.
Okay, well, I guess Louis wins by some sort of weird default.
Okay, cool. Best way to win.
All right, another mini break, and then when we come back, we'll have a few little bits, and then finally the answer to my stat of the week.
Ooh.
Okay, fine for a few more things I've noticed throughout the last week or so in football. Starting off with a guy whose name I can't pronounce, but I believe it's Bernard Chalandes, the Kosovo manager, who I've seen generally just in press conferences, sort of laughing at his own jokes, yelling about loads of things, and saying he loves Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. How do you guys feel about Mr. Bernard Chalandes?
I just like the way you've described him in your agenda.
Oh, sorry, I completely forgot I wrote that. Madder than a sock of hamsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've not heard that one before. I've heard box of frogs.
Yeah, it's a nice variation. I felt like box of frogs is used so much, it's not even mad anymore.
Mm.
So
Also, frogs just tend to sit.
Yeah.
There's the hamsters. You put them in a sock. Wow.
Yeah, the image of those all running around, just someone just holding them aloft like that is quite frightening.
It's quite mental, isn't it? Yeah. It's quite mad. Yeah. Okay. What is quite interesting, though, is Kosovo, little old Kosovo, have actually produced the best win percentage of his career, which is 60%.
Yeah, I'm going to clarify something as well now I've got the opportunity.
Is this about the size of Kosovo?
I may have suggested they have more people in their country than Croatia do. Croatia have more. Yeah. They have 4.1 million people, which still isn't many. So the point kind of still stands that I made many minutes ago.
I'm glad you have clarified that, considering the geopolitical aspects. I imagine any Kosovans or Croatians.
Yeah, of all the areas to perhaps make mistakes.
Yeah.
Couldn't think of many worse.
Yeah,
but
might not be too happy about that. Did Louis and Jack, did you see him sort of jumping around like a lunatic in his press conference?
Yeah, he's very animated on the sideline last night as well, which is good to see.
Good fun.
But yeah, he's an entertaining guy. You can see why people would respect him.
Get him to Watford.
Yeah. Could be the next. I mean
the ex-girlfriend will be out the door in a few months, and then
Flores will be out in a month, and then
he seems like a fresh bit of excitement.
Bring in the sock of hamsters.
Yeah.
There you go. I think the other sort of big thing that's happened this week, which is unfortunately probably bigger than it should be, which is FIFA ratings, which seems to be all the internet has talked about for the last 48 hours.
It's a symptom of the international break, isn't it? There's just nothing else to talk about anymore.
But there are, there are a few things to question here. Mbappe having a higher skills rating than a certain Lionel Messi. Quite strange.
Right.
Laporte being as good as Thiago Silva.
I think that one's fair.
That one's fair. Generous, that. I mean, come
on. I think the suggestion that Laporte deserves a higher rating than Thiago Silva is probably...
It's not even going to play this season, is it?
Also valid.
Ridiculous. And I think the most shocking one of all, Shukran Mustafi's rating going up somehow, despite playing terribly and then not playing at all for the best part of the last 12 months. And he's now better than Joel Matip.
Do you know what?
Just won the Champions League.
I didn't care about the FIFA ratings until I've just read that.
Yeah.
Because that is an aberration.
I mean, I don't know what they're basing it on at all.
The chief decision makers have to be Tottenham fans. They have to be trolling Arsenal. There's no way that's an accident of FIFA. Like, someone somewhere has been like, this would be really funny and this would wind people up.
I mean, it's certainly shocking stuff. But yeah, I think that they've released the top 100, and I think we'll probably be hearing more about this in the coming weeks. The game doesn't come out till I think the 20th, so a bit of time left to constantly discuss digital numbers that essentially mean nothing. It costs just £1.50 for a pie at Hamilton Academical. Louis Chandler, is that too cheap?
No, that's a great price. Yeah.
Does that make you question the quality of said pie?
Yeah, but then I question the quality of any food you get at a football ground, no matter where it is, really.
That is very true.
That ain't that bad. Because if you bought a pie in a supermarket, how much would it be?
Probably about £1.50.
That's not a question a politician would get asked.
So out of touch.
Yeah, maybe. Just they're buying pies on bulk from the local Morrisons or wherever. Fair play to them.
Yeah, I've not bought a pie at a football match for a long time anyway, so I'm not really sure what the standard rate is.
That was the cheapest in Scotland. Okay. And the average price, I think, was more sort of £2, £2.50 kind of area. Okay. Speaking of Scottish football, an absolute nosedive during the international break, as if they weren't already nosediving enough in general. They lost to Russia 2-1 and were slightly a better against Belgium, but still managed to lose 4-0.
Yeah, I watched both.
Yeah.
Unimpressive, I must say. I mean, it was weird. Andy Robertson sort of hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Said that the game against Belgium, they actually probably played better.
Yeah.
Because against Russia, they went in front and then just sort of...
didn't do anything.
Thought, oh, what happens now?
Yeah. And actually, Russia could have probably won that 3-1. They had quite a few chances in the second half, didn't they?
And then, I mean, Belgium are obviously a really good football team, but Scotland made some silly mistakes in that game as well. So they've got the Nations League to fall back on, which I think they're going to need.
Yeah. Poor old Steve Clarke. Quite a stressful start to life in a new job.
Yeah, don't envy it.
So finally, let's go back to the very start of this episode. Ricka Ricka Rewind, as Musty Tender would say, of course. Just to remind you what the stat of the week was. Harry Kane's missed penalty ended a run of 23 consecutively scored for England in competitive internationals in regular time. Extreme penalty shootouts. The previous one that was missed was way back at Euro 2004 against France. But who missed it? George Douglas. I know you know the answer to this.
I didn't say I know it, but I think I have one name in my head. But I think he might have just been the one that scored the consolation goal.
Okay.
Or the goal that England scored. Frank Lampard.
No, you're wrong.
Did he score though? He did score in the game, didn't he?
I don't know.
Oh, right.
I don't know.
Okay. David Beckham.
Lou Chandler?
Yeah, David Beckham. Definitely.
Jack Savile, who knows the answer?
I'm not going to... Yeah, David Beckham.
Old Golden Balls himself.
Wasn't very golden on that day.
No.
Take that,
Zidane David. Was, though, wasn't he? Threw up and then won the game. Fantastic.
I don't remember him throwing up.
Do you know what? He threw up on the side of the pitch and then he had a penalty and a free kick that he scored. And before the winner, he threw up and then he scored. What cool. a player.
Zidane, you're saying, yeah?
Yeah,
I think that definitely rings a bell in the brain.
What a lovely story, lovely anecdote to end episode 6 of the FC Nightly podcast on. So that is all for today. Don't forget to, download this episode if you haven't already, if you're listening via some other means. And if you do and you like it, make sure you rate and review on all your favourite podcast platforms. Check us out on Twitter. And we will see you next week.